Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the Juror 13 show on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Denny Griffin. For the next hour, I will be your host, and tonight we're going to be talking about domestic violence. And I have two great guests with me tonight. Let me first introduce Susan Murphy Milano.
Is that because you think I'm younger or older? We started out talking about baseball. Okay, go ahead.
Your number's first on the switchboard. Susan, I'm sure many of you are familiar with Susan from co-host of her show Justice Interrupted and another show on Blog Talk Radio. And Susan's an expert domestic violence advocate. She's developed specific tools and techniques victims need to safely leave an abusive relationship. Her books, Defending Our Lives and Moving Out, Moving On, are considered the Bibles of how to make the move away from abuse and deal with the many confusing situations surrounding a breakup or divorce. Susan is an adult survivor of her parents' violent marriage. Her father was a Chicago violent crimes detective who murdered her mother and then took his own life after the couple separated. Susan vowed to make changes after finding their lifeless bodies and trying to make sense of the tragedy. Susan's quest for justice was instrumental in the passage of the Illinois Stalking Law and the Lautenberg Act. She has been prominently featured in newspapers, magazines, radio, and television, including The Oprah Winfrey Show, Larry King Radio, ABC's 2020 Justice Files, E! True Hollywood, CNN, Sunday Today Show Profile, and many, many publications. Susan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
A pleasure. And also with us is Annie Jacoby. Annie's a female personal safety expert. And after surviving her own assault, Annie took steps by turning the negative into positives, focusing on her passion to help victims into her life's work. With 25 years of volunteer advocacy, she founded her company, the Realistic Female Self-Defense Company, which is based on a realistic approach for females to protect themselves mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and ultimately physically, building confidence and self-esteem. Annie is a previous board member for her county violence prevention agency, a member of the National and North Carolina Coalitions Against Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, to name a few. Annie is a firm believer that every female, regardless of age, has the absolute right to know how to protect and defend herself and deserves the knowledge to do so. It is her mission to reach out and help as many females as humanly possible, teaching and training these valuable skills. Annie, welcome to the Juror 13 show.
Danny, thanks for having me. It is my pleasure. Thank you so much. This is going to be fun.
Yeah,
it's great. It's great. I've been looking forward to it. Domestic violence is...
Can I open with something? Can I do
yes,
that?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Governor Schwarzenegger, I'm interested in knowing what kind of programs he's going to be teaching young people in the schools, because he just cut 80%, $20 million out of 94 programs in the state of California for domestic violence. Now, in that state, per capita, they've had more family slaughters. Slaughters, families. These aren't stories. These are murders of families that, you know, I guess they don't take domestic violence as serious, because now a lot of people, I mean, all these agencies are going to get shut down, all of them, except maybe for the state coalition, and they're not going to be able to operate on some, they're going to give animal shelters more than they give the domestic violence single shelter that's going to be left. So if you're a dog, your life is better than it would be if it was a person. That's kind of backwards to me.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense to any of us.
No. So this is, I was just enraged when I saw this today. And so maybe I thought perhaps he was going to do something as far as putting in a program, since he's such a martial artist and somebody who's body built. Maybe he's going to put that kind of program so women can defend themselves, although I don't think he's going to be governor in 20 years. But if at least he started the program and stopped paying for people crossing the borders, perhaps we could deal with our own families dying right here in the good old USA.
You certainly have to question priorities sometimes, don't you? I mean,
you do.
You know, I realize there's budget problems all over the country, but you have to cut the right places, I think.
But where's the, you know, seriously, and Annie knows this, and you know this in particular, Denny, where's the, you know, it seems like justice for criminals is really taking a back seat to, you know, the morality of people's lives, the respect. It seems to have gone away someplace. The internet's risen, and violence, as far as leadership and things and activity on the internet, and violence has increased. And I don't.
Well, I mean, you know, they. I mean, I guess Susan, we've always had this talk too. Is that, you know, I mean, they talk about the swine flu being an epidemic, and, you know, for Christ's sakes, I mean, you know, look at the statistics and the numbers, and that doesn't even, like, those are just not, those are the ones reported. But, I mean, we've got a huge epidemic in this country, and I think we all talked about, you know, how granting, you know, immigrants asylum and everything, and it's like, we don't even take care of our own people here in our own country.
Yeah, the government is wanting to help Denny and everybody listening. People from other countries who aren't U.S. citizens, who are battered, asylum into the United States. So that means, because I did a post about this, and it's not funny, I'm aggravated. Although you can tell, they did a post. I did a post about it, and I called around. I never write anything usually unless I call around. I found out what an asylum person receives. So they get full welfare benefits. They get, so that's a couple $1,000 a month. They get a secondhand car to drive.
Mm-hmm.
They get their living expenses paid for. They get housing to get them on their feet then. I mean, that.
And we have women in this country that can't even get Medicaid. They can't get food stamps.
They can't get
housing
in the court system. How are they supposed to defend themselves when they're getting beaten up in the legal system by the system that doesn't understand and allows offenders to either murder their children or their wives, or murder the mother by doing maternal deprivation and taking away the child because they're angry that the relationship has ended. So one way or the other, it's still murder, and no matter how you slice it. And how can you defend? That's why this is such an interesting show. And Annie and I were talking about this actually all week because we were so excited. How can you defend what you can't see, what you don't see coming sometimes? You always have to be on your guard. You always have to be prepared. You always have to be ready to one-up. You always have to be ready to be the best actress you know how to be. You know, it's very interesting that with this Chris Brown and Rihanna thing, as Chris Brown's been singing for his supper, or everybody else's, that's a very interesting case to look at since the governor's cut so much funding. I doubt that she was given victim rights. I doubt that she had a victim advocate. It was about what was best for their careers. So that right there says that I don't think that California, you know, hits the ball on the bat very well as far as a home run in prosecutions when it comes to murders in the home. And these are crimes, and they're not just domestic, because domestic denotes housekeeper with the broom and the mop. I mean, I still think of this 40s character with a, you know, her hair's in a curlers and it's got a scarf over it, and she's cleaning the house, and then when the husband gets home, you know, she's beaten around for a while because maybe he had too much to drink or had a bad day at work. It's gone beyond that, these crimes. It's not a slap. It is beyond that. So and Annie's had to deal with a lot of, you know, these women contacting her for, you know, what do I do? How do I get to learn about self-defense? I can't afford it. Well, if these programs across the country are going to be cutting everything so drastically, they're going to be able to veto line items of people's lives, then we might as well go out and buy lots of land for cemetery plots, because that's what we're going to need.
We're going to go back to the potter's fields.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just phenomenal, because it's just, they're taken away, and when you talked about, you know, Chris and Rihanna, it's like, my biggest concern when that all went down was, you know, what were they portraying to their fans? And you know as well as I do, I mean, you know, what, 98% of their fans are young people, and the education that needs to start in the home,
number one.
Oh, that is
and
not
in
gonna
the schools,
happen. That's not
well,
gonna happen.
No, it's not gonna happen if they're exposed to it. But we've gotta get to our young people, and I was so, as an advocate and doing what I do, and Susan, I know you too, is that we were so disappointed with the fact that, you know, nobody stepped up.
No, I wasn't disappointed. To me, it was a huge slap, a burying of the issue. These aren't just people's, you know, stories. These are lives, and he's going to do
lives,
it again.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, you and I both believe is that, you know, you hit me once. I mean, if he hits you once, he'll hit you again. And the thing is that I look at him right now, and I'm not bashing him, and I believe people need they deserve a second chance.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Let's back up.
Wait.
No, not when you beat somebody that badly. I am
sorry. No, you didn't let me finish.
Okay.
But I really believe that, let me finish, is that, I mean, okay, if someone, when I talk to people, I relate it to this, and I think we can relate it, is that, you know, when you have an addict, or you have an alcoholic, and they hit rock bottom. You can't. I mean, the problem is even with a batter. You know, a batter is a batter. I don't care I don't care any more than that. I mean, it's instilled. But unless that person hits rock bottom and wants the help, seeks the help, not from the minister, not from the spiritual mother, but from a psychologist who can go back in his past, figure out what's going on. Yes, it's a disease. But
what's
the
a
fact
disease?
Is
biting?
That,
eating? That's not a disease. That's a learned behavior that they feel that they can take out their anger on somebody else.
Exactly, but they're not doing any. I mean, he's not doing anything for that kind of help.
Well, I don't think it's a disease. My father knew exactly what he was doing. And so did your abuser. He knew exactly what he was doing. It was a planned event. These are very smart, intelligent people. They are these people that do this because they can get away. Nobody would think of them because they're so wonderful in the community. But these people aren't sick.
I believe that, you know, and right now, Chris, I mean, you know, the Brown thing, I mean, he's just doing damage control. He reads very well.
Yes, he does. And he talked about how he grew up and how they all had to sleep in a bed that everybody urinated in, and he had a bad life, and come on.
Well, you know what? Look at the rates. I mean, you know, look at every. I mean, there's been. I mean, he's not the only one.
No.
He doesn't give. I mean, it's not an excuse.
No, but it's California, so I guess I could see why the gov is, you know, eradicating all of this money that is needed for families, is needed, you know, as far as defense. As a little kid, I had to learn how to defend myself to stay alive. That meant, without knowing it, I mean, I know now, but I didn't know then how to.
It was instinctive. That's the thing with you, is that, you know, I mean, everybody, like Susan, we've talked, is that, you know, I mean, we have those, I mean, females especially. I mean, we've got this innate ability to, we have instinctive things that men don't have. And we have those things, that gut instinct, and so on. And what you did, even as a child, you followed your instincts. And that's one thing that we have got to really bring out in our females especially, is that, you know, we've got this innate ability, and it's called your gut instincts, and listen to it. And you did it as a child.
But Denny does it as a Denny did it as a police officer, right, Dan?
Yes, and I just want to run a little scenario by you, because there's something that's bothered me for years. I was working in a small village. Actually, I was with the Sheriff's Department. I was moonlighting for extra money in the small village police department. And we had one couple. They were not married, but they were living together. And it was every time they got into the sauce, they'd end up in a fight. And I remember sometimes I'd be called over after their encounters, and he would beat her. Sometimes it would be maybe just the slap and so forth, but as was said earlier, once that's done, there's more usually to follow. And I remember one morning I got called over on a Sunday morning, and he had tried to kill her this time, it looked like. Had her in the shower and had his foot on her throat, had her down on the floor, and took her to the hospital and her family. I called her family, and I thought they were going to go after him to to kill him. I mean, they were so upset. And, you know, this was going to be the time. She got out of the hospital later that day, and this was it. She finally had enough, and she was really going to go for it. And I'll be damned, arrested him, and within 3 days, she's back living with the guy. And I said, my God, how? I don't understand this. I said, how, you know, what does it take? And sure enough, about 3 months later, and that happened to be I was on duty again, and get a call. There had been a shooting, and he had shotgunned her, a shotgun blast to the head. She somehow survived, and then he took his own life. So, I mean, it was such a tragic thing, and I just couldn't figure out, you know, I wish she could have talked to somebody like you ladies or something. I mean, it didn't have to be, I didn't think. But the system, at least in my jurisdiction, couldn't really handle that. There was not counseling involved or anything. It was just, you know, do it. And I don't know, I was, that's always bothered me, because I felt she is now a vegetable and he's dead, you know. And I don't know, that kind of stuff.
I mean, I can jump in there with the self-defense aspect and the advocacy, and Susan can too. But the thing is that, Denny, you know, long before the physical aspect of domestic violence situation, and we all say, and even advocates, we say, God, you know, why do they keep going back? Why do they keep going back? But the fact is that as advocates, all we can do is give them, you know, the tools and say, this is what's available to you, and ultimately that's their decision. But long before that physical blow or whatever happens, that physical outward, is that you've got all the emotional abuse, you've got the verbal abuse, and, you know, she needs a man, she can't live without him, he tells her that she's not worthy, she can't keep house, nobody's going to want her. So emotionally they are beat up. Is it an excuse for her to stay? Absolutely not. But she doesn't have it, and I don't know how long this was, how long ago it was, but the fact is that they don't have the self-esteem or the self-worth to pull their bootstraps up and say, I've had enough. I'm not going to do this. I deserve better, and I'd rather be alone because I can make myself miserable all by myself. And that's why, you know, I mean, we look at these ladies and they just keep going back, and you keep saying, my God, what's it going to take?
I think that we have a book burning of Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty.
Yes.
And you know, we'll have a big bonfire. We'll put them all in, because when children have read those books, what they have this dream of, you know, Dorothy Clicker Heels.
Right.
You know,
your white and shining armor, and
someday my prince will come. I know I can't sing, but that's what we're all guilty of. We all think, oh, there's my dream man. You know, there was that game. I know, Annie, you remember it, and maybe those folks out there may or may not. And it was called Mystery Date. It wasn't the movie with Bruce Willis. It was an actual game where you spun around the wheel, and it was, here's my mystery date. And it was, you know, this thing was out there in the 60s, and you spun the wheel, and you got a dud or a good guy, or, I mean, it was amazing. And this is what little girls played with. And what were we given? We were given easy bake ovens. We were given, you know, Kenner stoves and refrigerators to play house with, because when we get older,
and Play-Doh to make food, and
and you know, creepy crawlers to make candy, and but the easy bake oven, that was stuff you could even eat. I think they still make it today. But look at what gets passed down. Where even today, mothers say, oh, look, I played with this as a child. Come on, let's go play. We don't teach the self-defense of language, of body language, of voice. And that's where these women kind of fall behind, because when they get behind the door after that beating of that woman you were talking about, Denny, he said a lot of things to her that nobody else heard.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is a good
You don't know what happens behind closed doors, and that's the
right.
sad thing. I mean, it's just. I mean, she takes him to, and if there's children involved, you know, 90% of the time she's going to take the beating, and she's going to take all the abuse just so that she shelters her children, and he leaves them the hell alone. And the fact is that she has. I mean, most of these women have been beat down so bad, and financially
verbally
ruined, verbally abused, that they have no self-esteem. They don't even look at themselves in the mirror and think that they're pretty or they're even self-worthy or, I mean, you know, or they've got a black eye and it's like, who's going to want me? And if I divulge my story to another man that might come along in my life, what is he going to think of me?
It's all my fault. And, you know, that's a good point. Even with when my parents died and later on, and I tease because I'm embarrassed, but I've had more husbands than people change their underwear probably during the week. And so
I've been there.
No. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Anyway, what happens is you get embarrassed. I have been embarrassed, even though I've been out there, about mm-hmm. what I do. I've been embarrassed by what my father did to my mother. It's like I remember dealing with the declines. Ken Decline had murdered Lori Decline in 2007 in Michigan. And I had gotten a phone call 9 minutes after he was arrested. The father, the wife had been found downstairs strangled or something around her neck, maybe a wire or a pantyhose. Anyway, it took a few days before they arrested him. But this SOB allowed his child, his son, to find the body. So I was asked, what are they going to do and what can they expect? I said, first of all, get the kids out of the small town, because what's going to happen is everybody's going to point to them forever. Those are the kids. Her father killed the mother. He was a cop. Or whether the child's eyes are open or shut, he's going to see that vision for a long time constantly of the dead body downstairs. And his life isn't going to be right. My life isn't right either. I mean, I have a skewed view on things. It's my life, my world is black or it's white. And so as an adult who grew up with this and survived it, and it's still a survival, it's still a daily battle with secrets or not talking mm-hmm. or not telling people things. People say that I'm very secretive. I'm not secretive. I don't think it's anybody's business or that people are that interested.
Or you're a detective. You know, I mean, if you have to, I mean, you know, I mean, when you've been abused, verbally, emotionally, financially, physically, you get to a point where your radar is constantly up. And Susan and I think we both are at the same point where, you know, within probably, I don't know, probably about 2 hours of talking to somebody, it's pretty much you can judge a book by, I mean, you can really look at this person and say, oh, nah, next.
Usually it's 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's like just talk to me a little bit, and it's like, no, I don't like you. I don't like
how
you are.
Like to see something, but yet if women still like that, there's that movie called The Ugly Truth. It's out in theaters now. It's actually very funny. My girlfriend and I went and saw it over the weekend and laughed because we appreciated it. But here was Gerard Butler, who plays the man, and he's very vulgar, very graphic sexually about what men want, what women want, what you have to do. And it reminded me of someone we both knew, so that's probably why we laughed so hard. But in reality, there's a lot of truth to that movie. There's a lot of truth to what women want. And in the end, of course, the woman gets the man gets the woman. And we see movies like that, Denny, where the ending is happy. The ending is... That's not true life all the time, but the woman wants the barracuda. She wants the lion. She wants that, I'm a man. Well, you know, that's what they want, and that's the attraction. Talk to me. Grab my hair. Well, what happens is...
I did something like that. It's like, you know, no, you leave my head alone.
But where when it stops and it's not so fun anymore...
No.
It's maybe enjoyable for a brief time, and then what happens when it escalates? Then you kind of don't know what to do. You don't know what steps to take to back out. Sometimes when a woman is beginning a relationship and the person shows up after they've been dating, and he's not giving her any wiggle room to be by herself because he's so enamored with her and he wants to see her. Well, he's really stalking her and controlling her and already creating this pattern for her. So her defense should be, well, I used to tell women to make up stuff. Tell them you're sick, you've got some contagious thing, disease, and then they'd leave you alone because that's what would work. I mean, I had someone that I knew that I was helping who I mean, I could see where this guy was going. I said, tell me of AIDS.
Oh, God.
I'm coming near you. And but, again, you've already set the stage. You throw them off with something that they wouldn't expect you to say. If I have a case now where they're going through a divorce, and it's a lot of years of marriage. We've put up all the safety steps. We cut the bushes outside the house. We got the motion lights inside. We changed the rooms inside the home where she's not sleeping where he thinks she is sleeping. We disabled the garage door, the electricity to it. We had ADT come out and put strategic placement of for a wireless system. Wireless is better than the with the hardwire because the hardwire can be cut. The wireless cannot. So in a burglar system, you want to leave it on all the time. Even when you're home, you leave it on. Mm-hmm. And I said, how much is it for extra ones? And I said, it's worth it. I want one here, one here, one here. I want them on the windows positioned where no one would think, because to me, you could break one and it wouldn't go off as quickly as if you strategically set them at certain places. And then what we did was downstairs, I still saw this window that when I looked at what his weight was, what his height was, he could fit through this window. So we fixed the window and used some unique products on the windowsill so that if he should come in, he's not going to get only cut, he's going to get stuck and scream for his life. So that is...
I'm going to teach him a lesson.
Well, it's about thinking outside the box. It's about
absolutely
testing yourself.
You.
And what's he going to do, charge her with something because he broke in and he's all cut up? And that's her house now? No, I don't think so. But this is how angry... It's death in his eyes. This is how angry this man is. He is so set on you won't get anything. And the judge yesterday delayed it or set it forth for a date in August for the final. I don't think she's going to make the final, even after doing all of these things. I want her to, but in reality, he's going to be so set. He's thinking right now how to make an accident happen, how to do something to the car, how to make her disappear. At all times, if you find yourself in this situation, you've got to do several things. You keep your cell phone with you all the time, not the one he gave you, another one. And you make sure that you're constantly texting somebody. And not while you're driving, though. And emails, sending an email out when you're leaving, doing the same thing when you come home. Start setting up a safety regimen so that you have contact in the morning and at night. The woman that was, I can't think of what state she was from, Annie, but she was abducted 12 hours. She kept talking to her soon-to-be ex-husband. Well, in my opinion, this isn't a criticism. It's an observation. Like, Danny, you'd make an observation on a crime scene. She went into her own crime scene, looked up the window, thought, what's this car doing here, and went downstairs. Why are we so curious? Why do we need to know? She should have stayed inside, not moved, and called the police. She did. Her reaction was, what's this car doing here? I'm going to go investigate. Wrong thing to do.
And that's when you say, run, Forrest, run. I mean, why would you even, that's what we have a hard time understanding, is that when you have something like that, I'm not judging, but the fact is that if you have a protective order or there's been abuse, why in God's name would you walk into an ambush?
But you don't think like that, Danny.
They don't think like that because it's a curiosity. I mean, it's just like, well, what's he doing here?
Well, and they don't feel that he's that dangerous at the moment because they're out of the house. They're away. Mm-hmm. And this is a really good and an important point. They're gone. They're out of the house. They feel like, in my opinion.
They feel invincible at that point.
I'm away from your father. No, this is the thought process they have. It may not be like that, but I sort of saw my mother doing this jig when I moved her. No, you can't be happy about it. You can't, you have to be on your guard. You can't go be signing things at their home. You can't, say, I need this money. I'm going to come and pick up the check. That's what mailboxes are for, and that's what delivery is for, and that's what lawyers are for. You don't need to have contact. It's almost sometimes what these women sometimes do, and it's subconscious. They don't think about it. They don't feel they have. They're free because they're away from it. They have nothing to lose, and they kind of want to show off the new them. Ha, see me? I've lost a little weight. I look pretty good. I have no stress. You're out of my life. Wrong.
And then their guard is down.
Yeah. Their guard
is
so if I can put a girdle on everybody.
That's when they pray.
Can I put a girdle on everybody then who's going through a divorce and every time they have a remote from some place, like a stun gun, and just hit a button for every one of them and go, no, don't do that. No, don't do that.
Ladies, can I interrupt just a second?
I'm sorry.
Was remiss in giving out our phone number. If anybody would like to join the conversation or has a question or comment, you can reach us at 646-478-0982. 646-478-0982. And I have a question. I'd want both of you to respond to this, if you would. When I was focusing on child crimes against children on the show a while ago, I learned that probably what we know, what's reported in the statistics, are really just the tip of the iceberg. There's so much that goes unreported. Does that apply to domestic violence also? Is there a lot more of it, you think, out there than
Can
we're
we
aware
think?
Of?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Oh, yes.
You know, I think we may have touched on this at one time, that the statistics for crime, you know, in the district that you worked in, Denny, when you were a police officer, the town reported and got the money from the city, and then the city got it from the county, and then the county got it from the state. So there was this budget. And in the budget, you have categories. You have crime categories. You have crime categories for robberies. You have crime categories for burglaries. You have crime categories for homicides, unsolved crimes, petty theft, right? You have all these categories.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's how they determine the amount of money every year for the crime that they're going to do and the fighting that they're going to do. In a lot of cases, when an officer responds, maybe somebody needs to hit the category box of unsolved over here because they can have another officer or more money. So they determine a lot of times how they're going to report the crime. It dictates by the city, the state, the county, the town, where they're going to get more dollars or more manpower to do other things. So they often don't accurately report these. That's why a lot of times in cases where there's been media, and I used to go right away to the courthouse and have somebody grab the file because it would go bye-bye otherwise. Nobody could get an accurate count of how many times she called the police or what really happened. And that was very interesting to me because that meant that they could come up with things. They're not trying to be deceptive. They're trying to do what's best to retrofit the crime that they're trying to fight. So I don't mean that to be malicious. I mean it's just a factual thing that happens that not many people know about.
Yeah. Annie, when people come to you, I don't know if you keep such records or not, but is there or anything specifically they're interested in more than others? In other words, do they want help in trying to bail out of a situation? Do they want counseling? Do they want? Are they more interested in the physical training, or is it kind of evenly divided?
Well, our training that we do, it encompasses, the awareness and how to read body language, how to de-escalate situations, and the first step to any kind of self-defense, and it's not martial arts that we teach, but the first step is awareness, and you learn that in basic law enforcement training, and to be aware of your surroundings. And I always say to my girls is that, you know, look at the cops. Do they stand around with their hands behind their backs or to their sides, or you know? But they're watching, and their hands are above their waist, and you know they're constantly watching their surroundings. They're aware of what's going around them, and they're checking around all the time. So awareness is your first step to any kind of self-defense. I don't care what it is, but that's your first thing. And then we go on and we teach preventiveness and proactiveness and safety tips. And then ultimately, we teach ground-to-ground. I mean, we teach hand-to-hand combat, Denny. I mean, the type of self-defense we teach, we're a division, we're certified through a division with Bluard Tactical Systems, which is now in Virginia Beach. And we teach civilians, and they have other divisions which teach law enforcement and military. And I told Susan, I'm done sugarcoating this. It's hand-to-hand combat. And what ultimately we're going to, what we do is we teach everybody everything up, you know, prior to that, but we're going to teach you physically. God forbid you have to have, you know, you find yourself in an altercation. I'm going to give you the tools and the weapons and teach you how to use your body to defend yourself, because you have every right to do that. But the thing is that, you know, I have all kinds of women coming to me. I mean, right now I've got a lot of young people, a lot of college, a lot of high school girls, young teenagers, because we start teaching at 5 years old and go right up through 65 seniors and disabled. But, you know, I mean, I don't ask, and it's not none of my students have to disclose to me whether or not they have been in an abusive situation of any kind. It's totally confidential. But, you know, being in the field for so long, and Susan can attest to this too, is that we have this innate ability that we can automatically, we sense it. We automatically know that there's been something's happened. You can tell by their reaction or the look on their face, or they might ask a question, and they don't have to divulge that. But we have women, and especially right now, we have more moms that are stepping up to the plate and making their daughters do this. And I personally think that the type of training we do, it should be mandatory. I really believe that every female, even if you start in middle school, should learn all the things that we're talking about as far as power and control. And Susan can tell you, because, I mean, these young girls, they think it's funny because these guys are acting stupid. And they brag about it, and Susan always, you know, she can tell you better than I can, but, you know, it's not cool, because it's just degrading, and it's demeaning, and they don't deserve it, but they don't know any better because nobody's teaching them. And when I talk to my girls, it's like, you know, then it used to be like, you know, we didn't want to talk about sex with our kids, because it was a taboo subject. It was like, you just prayed about it. And then it became, well, you know, when HIV and AIDS came out, you better talk to your kids about sex, because you don't want to learn, you don't want them learning about it on the street corner. Well, it's the same thing right now with assaults and rape and stalking and domestic violence. It's not a taboo subject anymore. And it's imperative for us as parents and adults to reach out to our young people and our females and say, you know, you've got to be educated. You've got to learn this, and these are the warning signs, and these are the red flags, and you need to pay it. You need to heed. You need to pay attention to it. So we've got a lot more moms now that are stepping up and saying, put my daughter in this class. She may not want to be there.
That's because you're looking at the mother and being guilty, and when you do a talk about it, you make sure and say, well, do your kids know what to do? How much did you just – and I've seen you do this. What Annie does is she points in the audience and says, how much did you spend on your kid in a pair of pants or a pair of shoes? You know, $200 is not very much money for safety. And that's what you're talking
about. Especially, old Susan, like I said before, I mean, this is life extension insurance. I had a mother call me the other day and said that, you know, well, how much is your course? And I told her, and she kind of balked at me, and I said, let me ask you a question. Your daughter is 16 years old. She's in high school. How much is her life worth? I consider it life extension insurance. I mean,
prom
it's
is
like
more
life
money.
Is.
How much is prom these days? Oh, prom and
yeah,
and limo
exactly.
And
how much do you spend on, you know, the nails
hair,
and the makeup
nail.
And the jeans and the shorts and the hair, and it's everything else. It's like, you know, but why wouldn't you spend $200 on having your daughter learn some techniques that might just save her life, God forbid. And something, and what we teach are mental blueprints. She will never forget it the rest of her life. And we've had two of our students have been able to ward off attacks due to taking our class. And I'm very proud of that.
I don't want to ever hear that a student has been killed or sexually assaulted after taking our class. That would devastate me. But I have, you know, two gals that did ward off attacks, and I'm very proud of them because they, one didn't want to come, but she came anyway. But the fact is that, you know, this is a drop in the bucket when you look at it, especially from our standpoint, is that, I mean, you know, they'll go out and they'll spend money on jewelry and,
concert
getting their
tickets,
hair.
Miley Cyrus concert tickets. And you know what I say to them? Well, okay, Miley Cyrus or whomever will be back again in concert. If they don't, you entice them then. Here, you take this. I'll get you the tickets later. You have to do this first. If you're not going to take this seriously, I'm going to take the fact that you want to go to a concert not seriously. I mean, you have to put your foot down. This is not there to hurt them. It's there to help them. It's like getting a flu shot in school, or, you know, every year you have to go. Everybody does, and it costs parents money for the dentist, the flu shots, the physical. You can't go. You cannot walk into school without that record. When you walk in that door, they don't accept you. They won't admit you. So why can't they have a self-defense course in the same way, a self-defense for their health, for their life, in the same way that they can't get admitted without that?
Susan, we're teaching at St. Mary's High School in Raleigh. It's a private high school. And we teach 9th and 10th graders during their middle semester. They've got 3 semesters. And I've got girls in there now. It's, like, amazing because they would rather be in our class than be in, you know, jazz, dancing, or ballet, or going to the Y and swimming, or working. And they come in to my class after they've gone through our course and everything. They'll come back in from the Y and say, "Can I do a final drill with Jake?" And Jake's like, "Okay." And they do their thing, and they're out in, like, you know, 15 seconds. But it's just to keep them in, you know, to keep that going in them. These are 9th and 10th graders. I have gotten so many emails from my girls that it's like, you know, they had so much fun, but yet they learned so much. It made so much sense to them. I feel so much more confident. I'm not afraid to walk in the malls anymore. But, you know, I am very much aware of my surroundings. I know that I need to have my cell phone on me at all times. I need to have a holder. It doesn't need to be in my hand. We teach a lot of safety tips besides everything else. So it encompasses a lot of stuff. But it's, you know, it's worth it. And parents need to pay attention. They need to step up to the plate and be parents and say, "Look, you know, you need this. This is imperative. You have got to have this the rest of your life." I have one mom. Her daughter's going to start school the middle of August, but, you know, I mean, she'll be kind of, like, really busy, but she's going to class at the end of August. She'll be in class. That's all there is to it. So we've got some parents that are just saying, "Hey, too bad, so sad, you're going." And some parents, I mean, you know, so it's really reaching out and really educating both parents. I encourage moms and daughters to come together. I don't put them together in class, but I do encourage it because then they can go home and they can practice with each other. You've got to practice on a daily basis in order to keep that fine-tuning in your brain and your body.
I've got a question. Susan, let me direct it to you first, and then I'd like Annie to answer also. When women come to you for help and they have a problem and they're looking for some assistance, when you start telling them what you think needs to be done, what they have to do to survive, as you see it, and to protect themselves, do you have any cases where all of a sudden they say, "Well, wait a minute, you're overreacting. My case isn't really that bad. I don't really need to do A, B, C, and D. I only need to do A and B." Do you have much of that where when they start hearing the facts and the recommendations, they cool off a little bit and maybe aren't as anxious to go forward?
I don't think I'm the norm because when they come to me, I'm their last resort, and they know it. Because I don't deal with the level of, you know, maybe somebody got hit, and then they could go to counseling. And I deal with the women who have been through war already, who are lucky to have survived, or who are close to being killed based on a lot of different factors, based on perhaps whom they are married to, based on history, based on the fact that the relationship is ending. So the cases are high risk. They're all high risk, but these are in specific so that when somebody says, "Call me," or "Get a hold of me," or "She's going to speak here," or "Train over here," it is different because it's specific to them, like their own fingerprints, like their own DNA. I encourage them to go to counseling. I work with their lawyers. People think that the lawyer is there to save them. The lawyer is there to represent your legal rights and to, you know, maneuver paper in the courts. Oftentimes, the lawyer doesn't understand and is driving the wrong bus, meaning the lawyer practices 20% family court, 50% DUI, and 30% criminal. You have to have somebody who is specific, and this doesn't always work either, and there's no real system in place for bad lawyers. I have a best friend who's a lawyer. Many of my friends are lawyers. It's nothing against the lawyer. It's the ones who feel who do get away with it and hurt everyone. They hurt the men. They hurt the women. They take people down the road because there's nobody that's going to tell on them. And the process through the disciplinary committee or the action against them is too long. And people come to the lawyers very beaten up, emotionally, physically, perhaps financially. And so you're allowing strangers to determine your life who didn't help you get married, who don't know anything about you. And so they're maneuvering all of this legal process through. And the kids, too, are maneuvered in the legal process. Even if you understand it, even if you know all about it, there isn't a lot to defend this. And I know that in August we're going to be talking about this because on your show in August because this is a very serious issue. And we don't have people that are held accountable who practice law, who abuse their clients in so many ways. I mean, I see it daily. And I'm even defenseless to be able to say, well, you can't do this. I mean, I back off. I try to nicely say, well, if you do this, and then this will happen. But yes, it's good to have a lawyer, but you need the outside person to tell you. It's like I'm your GPS. So while the box is talking to you and telling you where to turn around, I'm holding the box and saying, no, you can't do this. No, you've got to do it over here. No, we have to put this in place first. Get the lawyer on the phone. We have to maneuver this over here. That's what I do and what I've been doing for 20 years.
So by the time the women come to you, they already know what's involved, right?
No, they don't. They know that I'm the doctor who's got a specialized process for them that they're not going to find a lot of places.
And they're ready to listen.
They are, you know, it's a terrible, my parents' deaths that's my calling card. And people know that. And people read or they hear me or word of mouth or when I'm doing a lecture or workshop with Annie and I have done some stuff together. And they trust what I say that they need to do because if you read the books or you hear me, I'm not overzealous. I'm just passionate about safety. I just want people and their children to stay alive because it's devastating when that person isn't going to return anymore, and it's devastating when the system turns away. So, and I'm not well received by the courts. I'm not well received by the system. I don't know how to do it any other way but what's best for the victim and the family and the children. And so often I can get criticized because of, you know, doing something that nobody else is doing, which is their jobs. I don't tell them that. But they know it by me walking in, I think. It's this automatic, you know, it's like the skunk that's going to make the spray and you better go get some tomato juice and take a bath.
Yeah.
Skunk that walks through because if you're not doing what you're supposed to, I'm going to spray everybody and then you're kind of devastated and stunned for a moment. And then you've got to go take your tomato juice bath till I walk back in again and say, why didn't you do this?
Okay. And Annie, how about you? How about the same question? Do you, do the people come to you for help? Are they usually aware of how serious a situation they're in or could
you
be
know,
heading
it's,
for?
It's an array. I mean, it's interesting because I do have women that will call me and they'll divulge to me that
they're either in an abusive relationship and they're trying to figure it out, or they have just gotten out of an abusive relationship and they realize at that point in time that they need some education, that they need to know that they can physically defend themselves, God forbid they find themselves in an altercation. But most importantly is what happens all before that, because I've had some girls who are, I mean, they're still victims because, I mean, they've come to me like, maybe a month or two after their assault. And they, when they go through our class, they're like so shocked because everything that we teach, it's like, oh my God, that happened. Oh my gosh, yes, that happened. Yes, he did that. Yeah, I mean, it was, all about that power and control. And it's constantly like, oh my God, why didn't I see that? Oh my God, why didn't I see that? And why did I do that? Or why did I put up with that? So, you can't go around, beating yourself up constantly because, at that point in time, you weren't educated. But, when we do have, and I don't divulge even to my male instructors. I don't divulge that we've got, a victim or someone who's in the transition or she is a survivor, because that's between her and I. Not that anybody has to divulge that at all, but we do have people that come into us that have been through the situation, but they're looking for something more so that they don't ever get back into that again. What can I do for my self-help, my self-worth? How can I get my self-esteem back? And if what, when we teach and, you've got to practice, you've got to mentally practice, you've got to physically practice, you've got to fight that invisible man on a daily basis. You can't just say, well, I know self-defense and I'm all that. No, it's not that. And it's sisterhood. You don't go around telling everybody what you know. But you keep that internally to yourself. And we always tell the girls, all the ladies. I mean, working with seniors is a lot of fun, to be honest with you. I love working with our senior women because, we train them and we talk to them about going around in their homes and, if they do happen to have a cane, it's amazing, what a cane or a broom or a mop would do to somebody or even a plunger in a bathroom. It's amazing what that will do as far as, I'm going to put it out there, but, when you cross-check somebody, just like in hockey, it's pretty dynamic even for that. But we teach women, basically how to use what God's given them, and that's, their bodies, how to defend themselves. And we say that it's not about strength, it's about knowledge. We don't fight men with muscle because the muscle mass in a man is much, much more than a woman. That's the bottom line.
And talk about when you're pregnant, Annie. Talk about that.
And some people say, well, like, I can't defend myself if I'm pregnant. Oh, hell yes, you can. You can do it. I mean, it's just the fact is that you've got to know, if you've got it upstairs, it's that warrior spirit that you bring out in yourself. And so many women don't bring that warrior spirit out. And I always say to people is that, if you're, as far as a parent, we will take a bullet for our kids. So why in God's name won't you do it for yourself? So if you're protecting yourself and an unborn child, there are so many things that even a pregnant woman can do to defend herself and to ward off an attack. And it's not about staying in there for 10 rounds and just going at it. It's about stun and run. It's about, do what you got to do, defend yourself and get the hell out. And know your exits and know how to get out of your place or wherever you are at that point in time. And then, we've got different levels where we do weapons and we don't do weapon takeaway. We do weapon control. We take them to parking lots, parking decks, ATM machines, teach them how to use their cars, locks on your doors. What are they for? They used to be locked. Well, you use them. Even on your cars. So there's a lot of things that we teach our women that are pretty, and it's intense, and they leave, and we get a lot of, we get emails, and we get phone calls, and we work through it, and it might, they have these light bulb moments, and then they'll go home, and they'll start reading, and it's like, okay, well, what was that? And they'll call us, and we have refresher courses, too. So there's a lot of things that they come back with, but it's just about letting them know that, just because you've been there once doesn't mean you ever have to be there again.
We were talking about education and awareness, and it certainly in my opinion, vital, and that applies not only to abusers, but there's a lot of sharks in the water. There's sexual predators, there's con artists, there's thieves, killers. I mean, and for people in this day and age not to be aware of what's going on around them, it almost seems to me you're a prime target for somebody. Because
oh, absolutely. Well, Denny, the thing is that anybody can be a perp and anybody can be a victim. But if you know how, you know about awareness and you know what that entails and you know how to be alert and astute, and even if you're out and about, I mean, you're in a crowd, you need to know who's around you. You need to be there.
If you can use your cell phone and hit those buttons fast and Twitter and, you know, look at those people. They have contests now when they send their messages back and forth. Then you can learn how to defend yourself. If you can do it
absolutely
that fast and master that cell phone to send your text messages, you could master self-defense.
Yeah, because we don't teach martial arts. Martial arts is too much. That's too much for my brain. That takes too long for me. I mean, it's too many years. I need something now and right away. And being, you know, I need to be preventive now. And we even tell a lot of our girls, you know, as far as colleges, that, you know, of course, college towns have bars all over the place. But there should be always one person that, I mean, God, no self-defense, because you might be with a group of girls and somebody might drag one of your other friends into the alley. Well, you go after her, ward off that attack, you've got somebody else calling somebody, you know, the 911. So it's a matter of education, even the girls in the sororities and the colleges, is that, you know, they need to know.
You saw that one case, I don't recall her name, but her and her girlfriend were literally, they kicked in the door, they took the two girls, they both luckily survived, and she goes every 3 years to make sure that each of the three perpetrators who didn't get life but got X amount of, you know, 20-year sentences apiece, this is after they shot, they raped. They left them for dead, and she goes every couple years to fight to make sure that they get every day that they were sentenced to, because she's sentenced to this, and that's what people that aren't crime victims don't see. It hasn't happened to me. It's not a big deal. It's when you see the guy in the wheelchair or the woman in the wheelchair, and you go, gosh, thank goodness that's not me, but it could be you.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it doesn't take much. It really doesn't. So, you know, I mean, we also offer a lot. I mean, we also, you know, refer a lot of our people to read, you know, get the audios and read. And I just saw somebody say something about the gift of fear. I have that in my training manual. The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker is an awesome book. I recommend that to anybody to get, pick up, and read it. And it talks all about intuition and those gut instincts and follow them. And just pay attention, and we just have so many people.
Contact us and hire us for the day.
And that's all. Just bring us in, and we'll just do the whole damn thing for you.
Right.
You know, 6-8 hours. We can send you home, and we can, you know, you'll be good to go for the rest of your life. But, you know, I mean, no, but the thing is, it's no self-defense course, martial arts. There's no guarantees, Denny, and you know that as well as I do. Even with, you know, basic law enforcement. You know, I mean, you go through training, but there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee you can even get your hand on the weapon on time.
Sure.
You know, and I am not an advocate of weapons, but, you know, I mean, everybody, you know, floats their own boat. But the fact is that, yeah, bring Susan and I in, and we'll teach you a hell of a lot. I mean, you know, you'll leave and you'll go like, whoa, what did I just go through?
ladies, I don't know where the time went to. We're down to about a minute remaining. Susan, you mentioned a little bit ago about that you're going to be back on next month. Could you give us just a little brief description of what the show is going to be about?
Justice, oh, yeah, maternal deprivation abuse. It's with Janice Levinson, who has a site called protectivemothersalliance.blogspot.com, and also Claudia Dombrowski out of Kansas. It's where the best way to say this is when Jack and Duncan Connolly were killed, the two little boys in downstate Illinois, on a visitation, that was maternal deprivation abuse. That what the abuser does is he uses the courts to gain access to the children and basically punishes the mother. And we're going to talk about ways in which to attempt to protect yourself, ways in which you have to be on top of every single court motion and action that takes place, because they abuse you not just in the home, they abuse you in the courts, and when the abuser wants to hurt you, they take away your child or your children, and they do it through the courts, they do it through the mental health experts, they do it through people, and just dragging it on and wearing out your own lawyer so that you have to keep going through this revolving door. So on the 26th of August is going to be 90 minutes of people who can come on at night, because during the day it's kind of difficult. And this issue is near and dear to my heart, and I'm not proud of it, but you'll find out when you listen to the show. And what's important about it is that its awareness has not been discussed. People just think, oh, well, she was abused, or oh, there was divorce. It goes beyond that. And then, like I said, that's what the show's about. So I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. We're out of time, ladies. I really enjoyed this. It's very informative, and perhaps you consider coming back and doing it again sometime.
It would be an honor.
Absolutely. We have fun.
Okay. Great. I really appreciate it. And
thank you, Jenny.
I can say is thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Good night. And thank
Good
you
night.
For listening. And we'll see you next time on Juror 13. Good night.
Good night.